Aren't you so glad that the love of God is dependent upon Him and His faithfulness and not on our performance? And man, I'm so thankful that that's true about God, and He has a plan for our lives because we glorify Him. And He's invested in us, and His love is just overflowing in every part. He is a wonderful Lord. And the more that we give to Him, the more that we find that He blesses us. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. Let's go ahead and take our Bibles, turn to James chapter 1. James, as we've want us to catch the heart and the spirit of this passage, I don't believe that this is random thoughts kind of just being spit out here, but it's all a connection together. And we saw that it's addressing us in our trials, where our faith is being tested. Will we continue to believe God and take steps of obedience? And when we do that, that continuance, that endurance is called patience in this passage. And God will work into our lives everything that we need, so we don't lack anything. We're complete, and we're like Jesus Christ. But what we really need in that trial is wisdom. We really need to know, God, what's the next right move in the difficulty? And oftentimes that's a very helpful thing. Most of the time our trials hit us like, and we're blown around. I remember being a part of a time when we were on a trip with an evangelist, Jim Van Gildern, and he was riding along, and the wind crossed him over in his trailer and went whoosh, 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 and boom, it turned over, and it was everything, and all they had left was just the undercarriage of it, and everything else was just laying out on the middle of the road, and it was like you in a certain, in like a tornado type thing, where you just didn't know. I was bewildered. I didn't know what to do. I could pick up the thing that's right next to me, but there was just so much, and you didn't know whether what you were doing was important or not, and it's like a triage type situation. You can't really figure out where to start and what to do. A lot of times that's the way we feel in trials. We don't know what to do next. Can it be overwhelming? It can come down upon us, and we just need to ask God, please, God, show me the very next thing to do. Give me the wisdom. And He will give it to us. But we saw that we have to ask in faith, nothing wavering. Because when we waver back and forth, up and down, and toss to and fro, we're not going to receive the wisdom, the instruction that we need. This comes from the idea of being a double-minded man. And so I'd like us to kind of start here and go over to chapter 4. And this is a connection. And I think a lot of these things are, there's a lot of connections in this book. And it's really worthwhile our study. Verse 8 of chapter 4 says, draw nigh to God, and He will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. So He's going to identify this aspect. If someone's double-minded, they need to purify their heart. So purify, you know, if you think about gold, and you've got pure gold, how many elements are there? There's only one. It's only gold. That's why He says, purify your heart, you double-minded. You have two wills, two desires, and He says, I want you to get down to one. And so when we think about it, I think this is the old saying where it says, there's only two choices on the shelf, pleasing God or pleasing self. And if we're trying to do both, we're double-minded. And oftentimes, this is where we come in, and I think this is part where the next few verses are very key. Verse 9 says, let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he's exalted. And now we can contrast that, but the rich in that he's made low. All right, so we have two different groups of people here. The brother of low degree and the rich man, okay? But I don't think he's talking in terms of monetary wealth. Though monetary wealth plays into this, just like Jesus talks about, it says, oh, how hard it is for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven, that type of thing. So what he's talking about when he says poverty or low degree, he's talking about somebody who is down here on the bottom rung. And he says, let the brother of low degree rejoice in that is exalted. Now, you see the connection with this passage? What's the key word in that sentence? You could get it wrong, but you might get it right. What's that, Heath? Rejoice! That's what he was talking about at the beginning. Count it all joy. So let's see this. This is what I think is going on. When you go into a trial and your faith is tested and you continue to believe God and you look to God and say, God, please show me whatever you want to do. It doesn't matter what it is. I'll do it. I'm not putting any restrictions on you. And that's the idea of faith. I'm asking in faith, God, you show me, because whatever you show, I'm going to obey. That is a person we can call a brother of low degree. You want to put another word on that? He's humble. So in the trial, whether you're going to have faith or not, is really going to an aspect of saying, am I going to humble myself underneath the mighty hand of God, or am I going to resist him? Now the rich, in the book of James, I believe, and we're going to talk about this, the rich have the connotation throughout are those who don't need God because they are filled with riches. And so the brother who's low, when he's at that point, you realize, you know what? God's going through this trial. He's exalting me. And we're going to talk about what does it mean? How does God exalt the poor man who's humble through the trial? But when you realize that that's God's goal, to take you from down here and to lift you up here, and that becomes a part of your mind, you really can count it all joy. But you know what? What's really interesting here is verse 10 says, but the rich. So now we have the noun, but there's no verb. Does anybody know what the verb is that's not stated but implied? But the rich man should do what too? Rejoice. So when it's not stated, it's taking from the last parallelism, and it takes the verb from verse 9. And he says, you know what the rich man should do? He should rejoice too. What? Because the rich man is made low. Okay, here's how it works. I live my life. I don't think I need God. All of a sudden, trial comes. Pow! Oh, I need you, God. Oh, Lord. Oh, I'm so sorry. What have I been thinking? And all of a sudden, you went from rich, living your life like I didn't need God, to being made low through the trial. And you know what you can do? You can rejoice. That's what happened that night. I didn't think about it, but I needed a trial in my life when I lost my trumpet for God to get a hold of my attention and for me to focus upon Him. And you know what? At the end of that night, I was just praising God that I had lost my trumpet. I really was, from the bottom of my heart, that I had lost my most valuable possession, because through this, God had brought me down low. And it's in the, I went from that night, I was a rich man, and I was brought down low, and by being brought down low, let the brother of low degree rejoice, and that he's exalted. So the only place God can exalt you from is when he's got to get you to the basement before he can get you on the elevator, okay? That's the idea. He's got to humble you before he can give you his grace. I told people I was going to finish my story tonight, so I better do that. I'm running out of time. So, I said, yeah, I'm not going to fill out a police report. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to go home. My trumpet just didn't seem like a big priority at that point. And I went back to my room at 3:00, and I jumped in my bed because I was in there's a 3-tier bed, and I was the middle bunk. So I was sort of hopping up in there, and I landed on a hard case. I said, "What is this?" This is my trumpet. It was not, trust me, I know what you're thinking, that I didn't look in the bed before I left. It was not there. And I actually found out when the next morning I talked to my roommates, and they said, you know what? Someone from custodial brought your trumpet by 5 minutes after you left. They said they found it in a custodial closet 2 dorms down. I said, oh yeah, I remember after the last game when we had a pep band meeting, we went down to that basement of that custodial thing and I left my trumpet there. Oh, that's how it made sense.
How did they know to bring it to me?
Well, there was a sticker on there with my name on it. But it was so worn out, I couldn't read my name. I have no idea why it, and that was a month and a half earlier. I mean, it was a long time earlier where I did not know I was missing my trumpet for at least 30 days. It was sitting in a custodial closet for 30 days, and the very day that I realized it was gone was the day that they found it, and they brought it to my room 5 minutes after I left, so that I could go through that whole experience and come out the other side and say, God, this whole thing was evidently arranged so that I would think about this passage that night and come to a place where I recognize, Lord, I can trust you. Now, that's a pretty inky dinky. You know, you grow up and you live a little bit more life and you realize that was a very small trial. And there's things that are so much more important. But this passage is true no matter what trial we come into. God's purpose is to take us. If we're running along and we don't need God, a trial brings us down to a place where we do need God. And if you're living in faith and you're going through that trial, God's purpose is to exalt you. God knows that the rich man, it's interesting how he describes this. He says, because as the flower of the grass, he shall pass away. Rich man can't last apart from God. For the sun is no sooner risen with the burning heat, but it withereth the grass, and the flower thereof falleth, and the grace of the fashion of it perisheth. So also shall the rich man fade away in his ways. The person who doesn't need God may appear to prosper for a time, but when the sun comes out, what's the sun? It's the trials. It's the difficulties. And they fade away during that time. But he says, blessed is the man that endureth temptation. You're going through the trial and you stay the course. And you say, God, I humble myself before you and I'll do whatever you want me to do. Because God, part of his purpose is to purify your heart so that you only want one thing, not God and me, but just God and his will. And God has a special blessing for those. And I think we can, I'm kind of out of time. We can kind of bring it all back again. And come to the conclusion of what God's blessing is through all this. But it's exaltation. It's making us so that we are complete in Christ. We lack nothing. And in this, he says, ye will receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised. Isn't that neat? I mean, there's three different things that God says he's doing through every trial. And James knew he could be writing to somebody over in Damascus, and they lost their husband because he was killed for Jesus Christ in Jerusalem. And he's writing to someone else over in Antioch, and they lost everything that they owned, their entire family business, and they are as poor as Job's turkey. And he's writing to them this same book, because no matter what situation God's people find them in, we are to count it all joy, because God's doing something good. We'll keep that understanding and have a square view of that in terms of our minds, and never waver, continuing to believe. God will do all these things for us. He will bless us beyond degree. We will come to know him like we've never come to know him before. And so we'll try to wrap these things up, maybe even spill over into the next few verses as we go. But may the Lord bless us and bless us through his word.